Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services, and it's Friday, July 18th, and we have a full agenda today. A couple of housekeeping items. If there's anyone in the audience who has a cell phone, please make sure it's off so that you don't disrupt the proceedings. And we still have our two very favorite banks here with us this morning, and that's Rosie and Rosette. Those of you who have been a part of our hearings know that Rosie and Rosette are here to collect penalties or fines, if you will, when an individual uses acronyms. It is my way of trying to discourage the alphabet soup. And encouraging us to actually speak in just plain old language, recognizing that we all talk to each other in our various professions, but sometimes the audience and others do not understand what we're talking about. The funds for that we're collecting from Rosie and Rosette will be contributed to the Oregon Food Bank at the end of session. I think that probably next week we will go ahead and determine how much is in Rosie and Rosette to let you know how much has been collected during the session. So on the one hand, we want to discourage acronyms, but on the other hand, there is a worthy cause, and we would like to be able to contribute to as much as we can to the Oregon Food Bank. I need to also to announce that Senator Carter is not here today. She is still ill, and hopefully we will have her back on Monday. Representative Bates, you've had your Dr. Bates. this session, I think more than any, Dr. Bates has had to have a lot of office calls. We said that we were trying to stay healthy on the Senate side because in letting him have most of them on the House side, he's had everything this year from Representative Westland with his surgery and his bout with lung cancer. And we've had a bypass over in the House side. We've had multiple surgeries.
Two prescription pads this time.
Yeah.
That is not a good sign. So I would point out that Senator Carter's illness is not my making. She is a Democrat.
It's only the Republicans that begin making us get sick.
Stuff does happen.
The House Republicans are in caucus, but we will call them in when we get ready to vote. So with that, we will begin. I know that our first work session is on Senate Bill 5507, the State Commission on Children and Families. Can we proceed, Ms. Baker?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. There was distributed to your office yesterday morning another memo on a work session on State Commission on Children and Families with some revised recommendations from the ones that you had previously seen. And I summarized those things that you had looked at last time and that hadn't really changed, and tried to highlight the things that had changed. So working from that memo then, the first part of it again summarizes just what was in the governor's budget, summarizes the vacant position analysis that you considered the last time around, and our recommendation is unchanged on that. The other in federal funds ending balances, our recommendation is unchanged. We don't feel that there's money there to be withdrawn and used for other purposes. And then on the top of the second page, summarizing the recommended adjustments to the governor's budget, which relate to the second piece of paper, the spreadsheet that's attached. I'll walk you through those. The technical rate and assessment reductions for Attorney General and Department of Administrative Services assessments we talked about last time. These were just due to changes in those budgets. The merit freeze adjustment is noted there. This implements the governor's proposal not to budget for merit step increases during this biennium. The vacant position savings, there were two vacant positions, and those savings are included in the total staffing reorganization and reduction that's noted below, so I'll talk about that then. And then the other funds and federal funds, inflation adjustments that were in the budget related to the general fund inflation increases. So that is eliminated in this budget. So then we get to the other co-chair specified reductions. As we talked last time, there are significant staffing reductions in the state commission staff, technical assistance and central office staff. 11 positions are being eliminated. Two of those were the vacant positions. And the personal services savings is noted there. The services and supply savings has been changed a little bit to reflect the fact that the commission is in privately rented space, and the rent agreement requires a notification of the landlord, and so instead of assuming July 1 savings from the reduced level of staff and reduced square footage, we adjusted it for a more realistic January 1st effective date for those savings. So that number has gone down about $28,000 from what you previously saw. Then the next two items are unchanged. The budget suspends any additional funding for evaluation of the children's plan or publications related to the children's plan generally. And the grant to the local commissions that supports their basic operations is reduced by $1.4 million general fund. Then the next set of adjustments are changed from what you saw previously. There are some add-backs from the original co-chair's budget that was presented here. There is a Healthy Start reduction of $3.6 million. In the alternative that we had talked about at the last work session, that was almost a $10 million general fund reduction. This $3.6 million general fund reduction from the governor's budget makes a reduction from serving about 65% of first birth families in each county to about 50% of first birth families in each county, which is the level that the commission has identified as sort of a minimum level to keep that program up and running in all counties. Then the next item is really a $1 million add-back to the co-chair's budget. The co-chair's budget originally reduced crisis relief nurseries by an additional $300,000. This reverses that reduction and adds back almost $800,000. It basically brings the crisis relief nurseries back to their original 2001-2003 legislatively adopted level, so that the reductions that had been made in the interim because of the revenue shortfalls have been reversed in effect. There's no increase for inflation or growth or program demand, but it does bring it back to the original LAB level. The next item, if you remember in the original co-chair's budget, there was a $4 million reduction in the youth investment grant. These are other funds, social services block grant funds, and the idea was to reduce that by $4 million and use that $4 million to offset other general fund expenditures in the commission and then back out the $4 million general fund. The current proposal is to reduce that budget by only $1 million instead of the $4 million and basically, again, do a fund shift so that you're backing out general fund. So there are other funds, social services block grants, the amounts transferred from the Department of Human Services stays the same. It's just that instead of $8 million in the youth investment grant, you'll have $7 million. The other $1 million of social services block grant money will go to fund shift and free up $1 million of general fund. And then the next item is an add back to the court appointed special advocates program, again to restore this to its original legislative adopted budget level for 2001 to 2003. The next item we had originally presented would be to increase the other funded resource developer limited duration position that was new in the governor's budget to increase that to a full-time position with the expectation that it would generate enough resources to pay for itself and then some, hopefully. So the total of these adjustments are noted there, and the recommended budget that we're presenting would then be $48.8 million general fund, $72.5 million total funds, 25 positions, 23.50 FTE. That's a 12.3% reduction from the general fund in the governor's budget and a 9.7% overall total funds reduction from the governor's budget. So I guess the way to look at this is it's better than the initial co-chair's budget. It's still a reduction from the governor's budget level.
I think we probably would need to call the Smiths, the House members, and see if we can get them here for a vote. While we're waiting for that, I need to put on record my thanks to the work group that consisted of county directors and myself and Senator Carter and others who worked very, very hard on looking at the issues of general fund reductions. And I think for me personally, you did an outstanding job. One that I wish that we could bring all providers to the table with the focus of not only making certain that we were keeping a structure and that we were making certain that that we were able to continue these supports within the community, recognizing that when times get better, we could build back. And I just personally want to thank you because you worked awfully hard. And you were also something else. You were honest. And I can't say that enough. You honestly put on the table what you believe that it would take in order to have CASA to continue, to have the relief nurseries, to have Healthy Start. And I just have to thank you. Because sometimes in this building, we don't always get those kinds of straightforward negotiations, and we do not always get everyone to put on the table, really, what can you do in this kind of tough environment? And I just want to personally thank all of you who were participants in this particular process. That's all I have to say. And I know that Ms. Baker thanks you also. She was also a part of those meetings, and it's where you had both the legislative, the executive branch, and the provider groups coming together at the table to do the best job that they could for citizens of the state of Oregon, and most importantly for the children that we all care about. So I thank you.
Justin
Bates.
Thank you, ma'am. Just a quick comment. I agree with all you've said, and I was not in those meetings because I was working the health plan at the same time, but did follow them. It was a good effort, a good group effort. Having said that, there are just a few concerns I'd like to get on the record. One is I hope that the agency or the commission will continue to look for federal match for its dollars. I know you will. Please look at that very aggressively. There's very little federal match in this program, and knowing that the clientele you're trying to help here, there should be more available, I would hope. The other thing is this budget is about 13% 13% below the legislatively approved budget for 0103. That's a real hit. When you think of the inflationary costs you're going to have, which you have no control over, you're probably looking at something in the neighborhood of 16-18%. Your ability to carry out your goals and affect your outcomes is going to be hampered by that, obviously. I'm hoping you can maintain and not lose ground. And I'm a little bit concerned yet about duplication of effort between Healthy Start, Babies First, Together for Children, Great Start, New Parent Programs. Those are still unclear in my mind sometimes, and sometimes unclear in clients' minds of where they should go, and that's another issue I wouldn't mind you taking a good close look at to make sure that we haven't got people running over each other trying to get the job done. But having said all that, I tell you, I think you've done a great job putting this budget together. This kind of cooperation would certainly be welcome in other parts of the government.
I want you we will go ahead and move on to budget. They're still really heavy in caucus, but before that, there's one other piece of this that I think that needs to go on the record. This is probably one agency, and although I share that the federal funding issue, I know of no agency that I work with that does a better job of leveraging dollars than this one. And I need to put that on record. It does not show in our budget the leveraging that they do. And I think next session that we should probably include that within this budget discussion, because they do a outstanding job of resource utilization in their local communities and the work that they're doing with the federal government. So I would just encourage that next session that when we come before, the budget really reflects not only the general fund dollars and others, but actually what you're doing in the communities and how much the community is supporting your efforts around the state. I think that's valuable information that this body should have. I told someone it's kind of interesting. I was out at Building Blocks the other night, and when they were giving a volunteer recognition, and to learn that well over 50% of what's going on into that program is coming from the community. That is never reflected in what we see here in this body, and I think that it should, so that the public knows that they really are doing a yeoman's job in using dollars. So with that, Ms. Baker, would you walk us through the rest?
Okay. In addition to the budget, we would recommend you approve the budget notes and performance measures for this budget. When we came to you the first time, there were two budget notes proposed. At this point, there's only one. That budget note regarding the limited duration resource developer position has not changed. The change is in the second note, which talked about matching agency accounting and budget structures with some further work with the commission. The Department of Administrative Services now says that it's not as bad as they first thought, and that the agency doesn't need the significant level of work that they first anticipated, and so they would recommend that budget note that we first considered not be included in this report. So we would support that. So there would only be one budget note regarding the resource developer position. And then in terms of the performance measures, just to reiterate where we were, because of the significant funding reductions in this agency, they had asked to reduce their performance measures from 7 measures to 3, focusing on Healthy Start outcomes, commission-funded outcomes, and then a report on the amount of leveraged funds, which I think addresses some of the issues that the committee members have stated this morning. So that the performance measures that they would be focusing on would be those 3. They would track but not include as a performance measure performance by the court-appointed special advocates program. And then in terms of the planning focus, there wouldn't be that outcome measure, or there were 2 outcome measures related to that they would not continue to report on. And the volunteer hours would not be a performance measure that they would continue to present. So, again, these are not the only data that the commission tracks and that the local commissions provide, but there would be the 3 high-level outcomes that they would be reporting on to the next legislative assembly.
At this time, what I will do while we wait for the House Republicans will go ahead and open up. I'll close the work session and come back to it on Senate Bill 5507 when we have a quorum, and open up the work session and House Bill 5030, Department of Human Services, Health Services.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Mr. Britton.
I first want to hand out a pretty simple sheet that is an attempt to show you where we are with the Department of Human Services budget. And I'll pass some of these down that way. What I wanted to show you was kind of bring you up on a status report with respect to the Department of Human Services. You remember that in the Department of Human Services, all encompassed in House Bill 5030, that there are five main clusters: Community Human Services, Children, Adults, and Families, Department-Wide Support Services, Seniors and People with Disabilities, and Health Services. Those are the five main budget clusters that the Bill 5030 addresses. As you can see on here, we've had public hearings on all of those clusters, and we have completed preliminary work sessions on four of the clusters and one piece of the health services cluster, namely the public health portion. What I'm hopeful we can do today is the all other budget components within health services today, and that's the shaded area. So that's what we're trying to get done. It also shows you that the final work sessions on all of these clusters are yet to be done, and they are dependent upon the budget negotiations that are ongoing at this point. So that's just to kind of bring you up to speed as far as the status of where we are with respect to the DHS budget. Now I want to hand out the spreadsheet for the remaining pieces of the health services cluster. And my intention here is to walk you through each line. The first line is the governor's printed budget, about almost $4 billion total funds, $947.2 million general fund. On line two are the public health adjustments that this subcommittee approved back on July 10th. Cindy Jones from our office walked you through those. And on line three is where we stand after those public health adjustments are made. Lines 4 through 21 are reshoot request issues. These are things or issues that the department brought forward with respect to the remaining part of the health services budget. And for the most part, we are recommending approval of those. But as I said earlier, I want to walk you through those so you are aware of what they are. Line 4 was an April rebalance problem for the 2001-03 session. This was a revenue tracking issue where it appeared that the department had overstated other funds' revenue. We took care of it for the 2001-03 biennium. Line 4 would take care of it for the 2003-05 biennium, replacing $17.2 million of empty limitation, as it turns out, with $10.5 million of general fund, $6.7 million of available federal funds. Likewise, line 5 was also in April.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you. Before we go on to item 5, I have a question about 4. We heard testimony that we are at least 40 in number over census in the forensics unit at the state hospital. But none of the budgets account for the cost associated with that number over census. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, and I would ask the agency to correct me if I'm wrong, my belief is that the 2003-05 budget does take that into consideration and would at some point in time open up a new ward to address that over-census issue that you just raised.
I see Madeline nodding in agreement. And I see Barry. Are you in agreement?
Yes, would
you?
Madam Chair, I am.
For the record.
For the record, that was a very cast.
If we could just get that stated with real clarity on the record.
Barry, could you come up and not nod your head and state it?
Yeah.
And if you use an acronym, ROSI and ROSET is available.
Madam Chair, I'm Barry Cass, Assistant Director for Health Services. The 03-05 budget includes a ward that was to be opened on July 1st of this year, which was postponed from the 01-03 period, I believe, in February, by your actions to balance the budget for the biennium. In addition, there is a second ward that is scheduled to open on October 1, and a third ward on January 1, 2005. These beds anticipate continuing growth in the forensic program of about 1.5 patients, 1.5 beds per month during the biennium. We had prepared to open a ward on July 1, but under the continuing resolution, those funds aren't available to us, and we are prepared to open that ward within 30 days of the adoption of a budget.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Having that clarification on the record is most helpful, and we look forward to providing the leadership that you need in order to make sure that we get those wards open and also ensure that these patients are served.
Thank you.
Okay. You didn't do any alphabet soup.
Madam Chair, line.
He left before I finished. I think that should be a fine as well.
Talk to
your staffer. She's the one that is prompting me to make certain that we increase the amount of revenue to the Oregon Food Bank.
Madam Chair, I thank you for allowing.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you for allowing Mr. Cass to come up. This is an issue and a number that we should keep our eye on. As I recall from the testimony we heard from the hospital folks, that number 40 over census comes with it a cost of $110,000, I believe it was, per bed. Something over $100,000 per bed. And again, with the census increasing in that manner, we need to keep our eye on that situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Line 5 is also an April rebalance issue. This is some other funds that is available from the Multnomah County Corrections, and part of it is matchable with federal funds. This was in the April rebalance for 2001-03. These funds are going to be available during the 2003-05 biennium, and this is an adjustment to make use of those funds and match them with available federal dollars. Line 6 is a cost correction adjustment in the alcohol and drug residential facilities, calculation of their costs. Line 7, the department is stating that its federal community mental health block grant, their expectations for the revenue are down by $181,240, and they are asking for general fund to replace that federal fund shortfall. I will be recommending an adjustment to that, actually a reversal to that, and I will get to that in a few minutes. Lines 8, 9, 10, 11 are all related to December 2002 allotment reductions. These are the roll-up of those into the 2003-05 biennium. The first, on line 8, is a central operations reductions at Oregon State Hospital. These are apparently some savings, $155,000 of general fund and associated other and federal dollars. Reduced funding for the Office of Consumer Technical Assistance. This likewise was a December 2002 allotment plan roll-up into the 2003-05 biennium. Reduced funding for 24-hour, 7-day-a-week crisis response services in each county, about $872,000 of general fund. Reduced funding on line 11 for outpatient alcohol and drug treatment. This likewise was a December 2002 allotment plan roll-up reduction. Just to make it clear, none of these was in the governor's printed budget, but they are being added into the governor's printed budget as reductions that would continue into the 2003-05 biennium.
So this is a part of the governor's cleanup in his budget?
That's correct, Madam Chair. But they are cuts to his budget. Line 12 shows you the mental health and alcohol and drug program Medicaid match rate change. It saves about $1.1 million of general fund. Line 13 is the Office of Continuous Systems Improvement was dissolved. One of those positions was in the health services cluster and is being eliminated here, saving about $59,000 of general fund. Line 14 you have seen before in other cluster budgets. This is the effect of the eliminating the department-wide support services prorate. This is moving general fund, other funds, and federal funds directly into the department-wide support services budget cluster and out of the other four clusters. Line 15 is to correct an inadvertent double count of inflation reductions in the governor's printed budget, adding about $500,000 of general fund and a small amount of federal funds. Line 16 is to correct the governor's printed budget for capital outlay for the public health lab. When you did the public health preliminary work session, these amounts of $10,885 and the other funds and the federal funds were all added into the public health budget.
So you can find them in the public health budget.
That's correct. So they're being removed from this budget or this component of the health services budget. Line 17 is to remove a phase-in of House Bill 3024 from the 2001-03 session. These were mental health planning and dollars to implement those plans by counties. That was over the course of the 2001-03 biennium eliminated. However, they were inadvertently rolled in, or a portion of those funds was rolled into the governor's printed budget. This removes the remaining part of those dollars, about $4.2 million general fund. Line 18 is a proposal to backfill $1.2 million of other funds, and these were actually funds that were purchased by the Children, Adults, and Family cluster. Instead of buying the funds from the mental health or health services cluster, the proposal here is to simply shift the general fund out of the Children, Adults, and Families cluster and put it into the health services cluster, thereby removing the other funds limitation. Line 19, health plan savings from eliminating inmates who remain enrolled in managed care following incarceration. This is an effort to tighten up eligibility. Apparently, there were some persons who were or inmates who were remaining on the rolls of managed care health plans. the department has devised a system whereby they find out who those people are and eliminate payment for those people to the managed care plans.
I have a question. And if what's the address that's used for inmates? I would think that it would be a state address, and I would, I guess I question why we would have payments to managed care for those individuals once it was known that we could no longer pay, you know, no longer were they eligible for Medicaid payments under our current system. And so, like, don't we use a if I was going to have an inmate out at Oregon State Penitentiary, wouldn't that have an Oregon State Penitentiary address?
Madam Chair and members, I think that this focuses on county jails.
Okay.
I don't believe that it is focusing on the Oregon State Penitentiary
system. But even
system,
the county jails, isn't there a county jail address?
There should be, but the payments for these people are going to the managed care plans. But anyway, this is an effort to tighten that situation up.
Well, I would hope that they would continue to tighten this up. I think that the more we can reduce the error rates, the better. Because all the if we looked at the Secretary of State's audit report on this eligibility issue and this error rate, I think we were talking about, you know, here we're 1.6, and I think the Secretary of State looks found about $4 million, and $4 million can go into some of our other needs. Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair and members, line 20 is a projection of higher third-party recoveries by the department, higher other funds revenue, which in this instance can be used to replace general fund of about $1.8 million. Line 21 is similar to line 18. That is, these are general fund that used to be in the children, adults, families cluster that were used to purchase mental health treatment. They are likewise being moved out of the children, adults, families cluster and into the health services cluster.
And we're using other funds for general fund.
Well, we're using
general fund for other funds
that used to come from the children, adults, and families services cluster. Those are the reshoot adjustments that the department submitted to us, and we are recommending your approval of those adjustments.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you. I would like to go back to let's see, items 9 and 10. I think we need to be very clear that in the case of 9, which is a reduction in funding of the Office of Consumer Technical Assistance, that reduction, in effect, eliminates the office. Is that not correct?
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, that's correct.
And so we really should be describing that as an elimination of the office, not a reduction.
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, I can correct that.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Gordley,
following up, I think we also need some clarity about the impact of the elimination of that office, where those services, who else can take on that role, and what discussions have been taking place around that piece, who picks up that work. Looking at item 10, the reduction in funding for 24/7 crisis response services in each county, the information that we have received from NAMI tells us that crisis services have been reduced and are close to non-existent in some counties. And so I'm not quite clear on what this statement is telling us about a reduction of funding in each county. In fact, there are some counties that don't have any services.
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, in the governor's budget, as I understand it, there was a reduction but not a complete elimination of crisis services. The reduction that I have seen is about $3.9 million this is an additional reduction of almost $900,000 of general fund on top of that. Now, what my understanding was that even with the $3.9 million reduction, there was about $7 million left for crisis services. This obviously would mean a reduction to crisis services around the state. How that affects each county, I don't know the answer to that.
And I think, Madam Chair, as we go forward, we do need to be very clear about what this means in each county, because it's my understanding that there are some counties that don't have any crisis services. So, again, we're calling this a reduction, but in fact, are we not talking about elimination of services in some of our counties? We need to get that clarification.
We need that clarified, Mr. Britton. And if there's any, if I would like to ask Barry or Madeline to come up, or Bob. First, address the issue of the Office of Consumer Technical Assistance.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Bob Nickel, and I'm administrator of the State Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services. Technically, OCTA, our Office of Consumer and Technical Assistance, so I'll get the money here. Madam Chair, I'm out of practice, obviously.
That's quite all right. Rosie and Rosette welcomes your green. You know, we have, green is Oregon, as everybody knows.
Office of Consumer Technical Assistance technically is not eliminated because we had $20,000 in federal block grant money that we were able to allow them to continue with. And, in fact, they are continuing to operate. I just had a meeting with about 20 consumers yesterday, and they're hanging on by a thread, I guess you would say. So in terms of state general fund money, it's an elimination of all of the funds for that, but they are still sort of alive. In regard to,
when you say still sort of alive, what does that mean? Is it in all counties? I mean, give us a little more specifics about this.
In terms of background,
limping along.
Madam Chair, in terms of background on the Office of Consumer Technical Assistance, they're actually based in Portland, but they are available statewide. $20,000 doesn't allow them to get out nearly as much as when they had approximately about 10 times that amount. So their activities are curtailed considerably. They still operate a phone. I believe they still have a website. There are some kind of low-cost things that they can continue to do, but they're drastically reduced in their availability to provide technical assistance to drop-in centers and so on.
Now, my second question is, this $20,000 what they have for the entire biennium?
Madam Chair, I believe that's the total biennium amount.
So they are just really are not viable.
Madam Chair, you know, one of the things that I've been impressed with them by is their willingness to continue on. I was surprised. I thought they would fold entirely, and I think they are barely viable. But they are survivors, literally, and they're managing somehow.
Senator Gordon.
Yeah, does that mean, what does that mean, they're managing somehow? Are they, there's an office with people in it during regular business hours providing services? What are we saying?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, they still have an office and a phone number. Mr. Roland Shelton is, as I understand it now, the only person who's employed. I don't know how he manages his own personal finances with only $20,000 for the program, but he, as I mentioned, he was one of the people who helped me arrange a meeting of 20 consumers yesterday, and he is a remarkable guy, I guess you would say, and is somehow hanging on.
Maybe we ought to have him come down here to help us. You know, if somebody can take, I mean, that's very, very austere. Representative Bates.
Madam Judge, the answer to my question is probably in there. He's obviously volunteering his time
and effort.
It's his volunteer program now with $20,000. That'll maybe buy a little space and maybe buy you a phone line. The space is probably being volunteered from somewhere, too, I would guess. I mean, for $20,000, you're buying a phone line, some computer, some paper. I mean, that's not really a viable state program anymore. It's a volunteer program.
Senator Shields.
I have to say that I keep seeing visions of these kinds of operations in the inner city, southeast Portland, over the years. And the word viability isn't adequate, because these people are used to living in poverty. They're used to facing all kinds of situations that you and I never face in terms of helping one another from within their own pain and from within their own neglect by the rest of society. They do some amazing things, so I just wanted to be very careful about us saying they're not viable. Yeah, by our standards, maybe they're not, but in terms of the 20 consumers that were willing to come yesterday and meet this fine gentleman, it's a lifeline, it's a connection, it's a network, it's a link that makes a lot of difference in their lives.
Thank you.
Item 10.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, in regard to my understanding of crisis services, crisis services are funded primarily with the remaining state general funds that are in the budget, and there's not nearly as much as there was. And I don't think that anybody has ever argued that we had too much in the way of crisis service availability, even when we were fully funded. The other funding source, of course, is the Medicaid managed care funds. But we have to keep a separation between crisis services for people who are Medicaid eligible and under managed care, for which there's still been a relatively strong funding base, except for the standard population, and the people who have no Medicaid coverage at all. And it puts programs in a pretty awkward position of trying to decide, do they have a different standard for admission to crisis services depending on Medicaid eligibility? But it's a significant problem with the reduction in crisis dollars.
My concern, Madam Chair?
Senator Gordon.
And not to cut you off, Mr. Nickel, but my concern is that we're calling this a reduction in funding, when in fact, in some counties, this reduction actually means elimination. For example, if we look at Deschutes County, they have no 24-hour crisis response. There are other counties in similar straits. And so, again, Madam Chair, I think we just need to be really clear about what we are saying in this particular line item. Reduction is really elimination in some of these counties.
I guess the question becomes, which counties are there no 24/7 crisis response as a result of this action?
Madam Chair, we can get that information county by county. I know that the county mental health directors have provided some information. I assume that maybe you've got a copy of that somewhere. And we can go back and do a more current analysis of that. I would say that different counties have handled the cuts differently depending on whether they had any kind of ability to dip into some reserve funds. So some actually were able to continue a little bit longer to see what would happen.
Could you provide me with the report of one, the counties that do not have the 24/7 ability for crisis response, as well as the information of how the counties, the 36 counties, handled the budget issue?
I'm sure we'll do that.
Madam Chair,
Senator Gordley.
Just to follow up, there is a report from the Association of Oregon Counties that present some of this information for us, and I'm referring to that document now. What they also tell us is that looking at the current state of affairs, in addition to the crisis services having been reduced or being close to non-existent in some counties, nearly 1,000 FTE mental health positions have been lost in 32 counties, representing a loss of services for approximately 50,000 individuals. 168 day treatment slots for children and adolescents eliminated. Case managers have been reduced to crisis management, such as trying to find prescription assistance for clients who have lost coverage, and they're having minimal success even with that. Housing for the seriously mentally ill is in critical short supply. Families and mental health care workers are stressed to intolerable levels trying to cope with inadequate resources for the care of the seriously mentally ill. And NAMI, the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, also tells us that they're losing family members to suicide, and others are declining rapidly as treatment and supports disappear. In this same report from the Association of Oregon Counties, there's a listing of counties and the total number of mental health staff laid off in each county. They also tell us the number of alcohol and drug program staff that have been laid off. And what this means in terms of the number of clients not being served now in each of our counties, the information is just really it's just deeply troubling, and it's information that some of you already know. But I just wanted to go through that list and put it on record so that we're very clear about the impacts that are happening out there in our communities around the state that are just stretched beyond belief.
Madeline.
For the record, I'm Madeline Olson, the Assistant Administrator for the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services. And just this situation with the crisis funds is similar to the ward at Oregon State Hospital. The way the continuation of the cuts that occurred in February was handled, it does leave about $7 million in the budget for 0305, but in June, there's no money, general fund, for crisis services, so the continuing resolution for July has no funding for crisis services, so the county contracts have no funding for crisis services for the 24-hour, 7-day-a-week system that we hope to have in place.
So we're going back to House Bill 5100 and the February 28th vote.
Yes.
It's also interesting, Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley.
If I may say this, and I'll conclude my concerns with this statement. In the documents that we received from NAMI, they include a statement from President George Bush, which I think is just really, it's very compelling given where we are now as a state and in how we serve the mentally ill. President Bush was speaking at the University of New Mexico on April 29, 2002, and he said, "We must work for a welcoming and compassionate society, a society where no American is dismissed and no American is forgotten. This is the great and hopeful story of our country, and we can write another chapter. We must give all Americans who suffer from mental illness the treatment and the respect they deserve. We have a long way to go."
Amen. Madam Chair, again, back online. 23. This was the summary of the reshoot adjustments that were submitted to us by the Department of Human Services. I want to make a couple of comments. The first is that in my memo, the subtotal of the reshoot adjustments was understated. These are the correct amounts. On line 22, the reshoot would add about $4.7 million general fund, and you can see the other changes to the overall budget.
The other comment is to get on the record that there were other adjustments that were submitted to us by the department, but they were budget neutral. That is, they represented shifts from one sub-budget structure to another. And I did not choose to walk you through all of those because they have no budgetary, net budgetary impact. They're just simply moving money and limitation from one budget structure within health services to another. So they were technical adjustments in nature. If I may continue, Madam Chair and members, on line 24 are the Attorney General rate reductions, about $20,000 of general fund for the health services cluster, merit freeze adjustment, about $3.7 million reduction in general fund, vacancy position savings of about $1.2 million of general fund. We are recommending the elimination of 40 positions, 31.54 FTE. Following line 26 are other co-chair specified reductions. There is the elimination of gambling addiction lottery funds, and I note here that they would be used for other purposes in the statewide budget. This adjustment effectively eliminates lottery funding within the Department of Human Services, though I would note that I have seen it on a variety of ad-back lists, so this may not be the final say on these particular gambling addiction funds.
Madam Chair, just to go on the record, putting back some of these gambling addiction funds are really necessary. The people of the state passed the lottery on several occasions, and some of those votes were based on that we'd have addiction services available. In fact, I think we've seen substantial evidence that we've actually reduced the amount of addictive gambling in this state as a result of using these lottery funds. It's probably less now than when we brought the lottery in, because before it was underground. People would be online with people in Reno and Nevada and getting in serious trouble with no hope of getting out of it. These funds have really been effective. We've seen that before, and I want to make sure we understand that.
I do, and I echo what Mr. Britton said. I think that this particular item is on everybody's list that I've reviewed and looked at. And I also understand business referral program change bill.
Madam Chair, this particular adjustment and one that was made during the public health portion of the preliminary work session both require a program change bill, and that is to adopt language to the effect that notwithstanding the 1% allocation of lottery funds toward gambling addiction services and tobacco use reduction account with respect to the tobacco tax, that the Assembly has decided to use those available revenues in a different way, namely to solve other
problems. Item 30 is the same request.
Yes, and we'll get to that in a second. Line 28 was also a co-chair reduction. It was a $5 million general fund reduction to alcohol and drug funding.
And I might, you don't need to lift your hands, that is also one that your chair is also working with, recognizing that probably there's several issues in the state that those of us here know. That if I look at the services to children and families, if we look at those breakdowns, we know that 70% of those are alcohol and drug related. If we look at what's in our correctional institutions, we know there again we're talking about alcohol and drug use. So I don't think you can talk about, we talk about the dual diagnosis in mental health. There's nothing that we can, from this committee's work, that you can't look if there's not a nexus between alcohol and drugs. So that is on the list so that you know what's there. I know that this body has shared those same concerns.
Line 29 is a co-chair addition to the Oregon Health Plan that they made back in April, I believe it was, that would add $38.4 million of general fund to the Oregon Health Plan. And you see the rough calculation of associated federal match. line 30 completes a reduction to general fund that is related to the tobacco use reduction account. When Ms. Jones walked you through the work session for public health, she removed half of the tobacco use reduction account tobacco tax money, the $7.9 million. This is using that tobacco tax money that was eliminated from tobacco use reduction to the Oregon Health Plan and backfilling general fund with those funds. Then we come to some other legislative fiscal office recommendations. Line 31 is a recommendation to not backfill the mental health block grant revenue shortfall with general fund. This was a reshoot adjustment back on line 7. I would point out that in the past, in several rebalance or in one rebalance plan that I'm aware of, although the there was additional mental health block grant revenue and we were restricted in our ability to use it to backfill general fund, we did not use it to backfill general fund. So we had an addition to this block grant that we couldn't use to backfill general fund. To be consistent in some respects, this would not backfill a loss of that revenue. The other thing that I was told yesterday was that a related grant, the alcohol and drug substance abuse grant, the revenue is going up, and it may offset some or all of any federal funds reduction to the community mental health block grant. Line 32 is really a technical adjustment. When the governor's printed budget was being constructed, we have a 10-cent sunset on the cigarette tax because the tax was scheduled to sunset on January 1st of 2004. Mr. Naughton put about $21 million or so of general fund, or I'm sorry, of other fund limitation in the budget, expecting that that sunset would be repealed. We have every expectation that, that it will be repealed. So we are shifting the funds out of the other funds category and into the tobacco tax category. It's about $21.3 million. Line 33 is to true up, in this case down, the tobacco tax revenue to the most recent economic development or economic forecast. This is about $1 million less than had really been assumed in the governor's budget, and it is backfilled in this instance with general fund. On the next page, line 34, we are using some tobacco tax that is not yet being used to backfill some available general fund. Some of you are aware that there are other pricing of the Oregon Health Plan, and many of you have seen that additional pricing. That pricing assumes a level of tobacco tax that is $5 million less than what we actually have available for the health plan. So we're using that particular $5 million to backfill general fund, and that is line 34. Line 35 is related to House Bill 2095. It is a child enforcement, support enforcement bill. Among other things, it makes the Oregon Health Plan the payer of last resort when a child has coverage, health insurance coverage, through a parent's health insurance policy. The fiscal impact statement expected that we would save about $122,000 of general fund, and that's what this particular reduction is. Line 36 is associated with House Bill 2368. Within the Department of Revenue, there is a tobacco tax task force, which in the 2001-03 biennium was funded with general fund. and this bill would fund that task force with tobacco tax, thereby reducing the tobacco tax wherever else it's used, general fund, the tobacco use reduction account, or most notably in the health plan. So this reduces the tobacco tax that is available to the department by about $2.4 million, and this adjustment would backfill that loss of tobacco tax with general fund.
Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, what is the role of this task force?
Madam Chair and Senator Morris, the role of the task force is to make sure that the tobacco tax is paid. I believe they are involved in all kinds of enforcement activities. They estimate that during the 2001-03 biennium, the task force increased tobacco tax revenue by about $8 million. And their expectation is that for 2003-05, it would increase it by about $8.6 million.
Thank you.
The last recommendation with respect to LFO adjustments is to use some freed up other funds revenue in the Oregon State Hospital Savings Adjustment. This was a reshoot adjustment back on line 8 to use that freed up other funds revenue to backfill general fund with it. With that, Madam Chair, and these are my recommended adjustments for this preliminary work session.
We cannot do a full vote on this particular either until after we get the House members here to have a quorum. So we will do the same thing. We will go ahead and
close
the work session on House Bill 5030 and open the work session on House Bill 2189. Are we ready, Mr. Britton?
Madam Chair, we are. We had a public hearing on House Bill 2189 on June 30th. We did not have a work session at that time. This bill is related to the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program. And
members, I want to note something. Because I believe that Mr. Britton is so precise, if you notice, he has not made one acronym, or nor has he done any alphabet soup today at all.
Madam Chair, that's because I'm cheap.
I thought you were going to say, you know, I wanted to make sure that you understood exactly what we were talking about.
I want to make sure you understand exactly what we're talking about.
Okay.
This, again, we had a hearing on the A.N. Gross version of House Bill 2189. The main point of the bill was to attempt to get federal matching funds on the Oregon Medical, let me think, I want to say OMIP, but I'm afraid to. The Office of Medical, or the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool. And that's what this particular bill does. We were holding the bill to make one change to it, and that was to change the 185% eligibility, federal poverty level eligibility level, up to 200% to make the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program consistent with where our discussion on the Children's Health Insurance Program are going. The other change that is being adopted or would be adopted in the A4 amendment is a change from language in the A. Engrossed bill, which refers to uncompensated costs, and instead of that language throughout the bill, it would use other costs. And this was a Department of Human Services suggestion. The third change is on line 8 of the A. Engrossed bill. A subsidized member means an individual who is enrolled in a benefits plan. The A4 amendment would change that to a subsidized member means a medical assistance client rather than individual. And this change was also suggested by the Department of Human Services. So the A4 amendment makes those three changes that I just noted.
Any discussion? Senator Morris.
Is there any estimate of the revenue impact?
Madam Chair and Senator Morris, I'm not sure. We had a staff measure summary that I handed out to you, and it did not mention the additional revenue. I'm not sure how much of the Oregon medical insurance pool assessments could be matched. I'm not sure anybody is really ready to or knows that just yet. But the object would be to reduce those assessments to insurance companies by using federal match. So, but to answer your question directly, I'm not aware of a revenue impact.
Senator Moore.
Thank you for following. When would this be anticipated to be received, these additional revenues?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, I don't know the answer to that question.
Was there any reason why that wasn't reviewed, of whether or not there would be an impact or not?
Madam Chair and members, I don't think there was any reason why it wasn't reviewed. I think that we are not altogether certain that we can do this, but I think the bill would have the Insurance Pool Governing Board and the Department of Human Services work to make sure that they can do it and see how much the assessment would be and how much that assessment would be reduced through the introduction of federal match. So I think there's general agreement that this is a good idea.
But until they get into the process, they really don't know.
That's my belief, Madam Chair.
Lynn, were you involved in any of this discussion?
It was primarily been within the family health insurance.
Okay. Is Kelly?
I'm probably going to have to go back and get my wallet. We'll try. For the record, my name is Kelly Harms, and I'm the Communications and Policy Manager for the Insurance Pool Governing Board. And one of the reasons that we did not have a fiscal impact on this bill is because the revenues that would be generated really aren't going to be coming into the program. It is a reduction that we would be able to make against the assessment. So instead of charging an insurer, let's say we have to spread the assessment of $1 million, that would be the costs that are not covered by the premiums for the FEOP OMIP claims. Okay, there's two. What we would be able to do is claim some federal match against that. We would be able to reduce the assessment against the insurers by probably 60%. So we would charge them less for the services that on the assessment. Does that make sense? So it's really not, the revenues aren't coming into the state. It is really a reduction against the charges that are made to the insurance carriers in the state. We didn't do a fiscal impact on the limitations that we may need. We decided that if we need additional limitation for the program, we could come back to an e-board later after we had a better idea of what that impact might be. So that's the reasons we hadn't done that. Does that make sense, Senator Morris?
Reasonably, but it'd be helpful to see how that.
I'd be happy to meet with you later and show you the process, but it really, again, is providing some relief to the insurance carriers for these high claims cost clients that come through the Oregon, the FEOP program and the Oregon medical insurance pool.
And you're finding another way to do federal match.
Right. It's federal money that we can bring into the state that we normally would not be able to get. And these statutory changes are needed so that we can do this legally. We still need to work with CMS to make sure that we can have it and have that start.
Thank you.
And I'll pay Rosie later.
Yes, because, you know, Rosie has been, she's awfully hungry today.
Okay, we'll make sure she gets it.
And Senator Carter is not here to remind everyone.
She's probably listening.
As Senator Gordy said, she's probably listening to us, though, however, from her bed. Any further questions on this particular, on House Bill 2189? Okay. No more comments? We will close the work session on House Bill 2189 and open the work session, Department of Human Services, federal grant application request for adolescent and adult pertussis immunization. Well, hi. How are you? Good. We don't often see you in our committee.
I don't, so... The inexperience.
Miss. You want to, do you have something to ask?
Madam Chair and members, before you, there should be the summary analysis from the Legislative Fiscal Office as well as the Department of Administrative Services. This is a request from the Department of Human Services to approve a federal grant application to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Grant is approximately $325,000 in the first year that could be available to evaluate the effectiveness of pertussis immunization.
We have received a lot of press on this particular grant application. I am glad that we're able to hear this grant application today. And I know that the others are very pleased that we're able to hear this grant application today as well. With that, we will hear from Donelda. I know that she probably has something that she wants to say to us, as well as maybe Barry Cass. So,
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Donelda Dodson, Administrator for the Office of Family Health. And thank you for hearing this application to apply for a grant to the Centers for Disease Control for tracking down whooping cough or pertussis. Essentially what this grant does is it allows, if should we be able to accept this or obtain it, it would allow us to work with the Eugene, Springfield physicians, hospitals, and laboratory in that area to work with their medical care providers to increase their awareness and their screening practices for whooping cough or pertussis. We, as you may already know, Oregon is in a kind of in an epidemic situation with whooping cough. Currently, we have twice the national average of whooping cough incidences in our state. We are in the process of tracking down whooping cough in three of our counties. Currently, we have had an incidence with whooping cough. We've had an infant die this spring with this disease. And we are finding that we are continuing to have cases. This particular grant would allow us to work with those health care providers in this area. We are seeing an increase in whooping cough, even though we do have an 80% coverage of immunizations for infants. The thought is that adults and adolescents are coming down with whooping cough, and our health care providers are not thinking of whooping cough in this population. So consequently, then they would spread it to the more vulnerable infant population before those infants receive vaccination. So this grant would allow us in this particular area to work with those physicians, hospitals, outpatients to increase their awareness and increase their skills in identification of this illness.
Danella, I do have some questions, and it's process questions. Because there's been a lot of discussion as to whether or not the agency has already approval from the federal government. and that the grant has been awarded, and I just need to know what is the activity between the agency and CDC.
Madam Chair, the grant application was due on June 5th. It is our understanding that they are in the process of reviewing those grants at this particular time. We do not expect to hear until September whether or not we should receive this grant. So we're in the process. We did notify all the people about our request to apply for the grant.
Yeah, what it's saying, CDC. Go ahead. Center for Disease Control.
Right. I do have one in my pocket.
I just made a donation.
We did send a letter to notify our request to apply in May, and then we did, in the time period of waiting to see whether or not we could apply, we continued with the application and did fill the application. So we're here to ask for retroactive permission to apply. But the grant has not been awarded.
Has the Center for Disease Control allowed you to extend the application deadline? I think that's since they had a deadline of due. I'm assuming that the federal government did have a deadline, or have they not a deadline?
Madam Chair, the deadline for submission was June 5th.
Then has the Center for Disease Control, have you communicated with them that you were not able to get the approval from this body in time, that they were willing to extend that time period?
Madam Chair, the grant has already gone in, so we have not needed to extend that period. So we are here to ask for retroactive approval for this particular grant. Am I not answering the question correctly?
I think
Barry
is asking a different question.
Oh, sorry.
Madam Chair, Barry Cast, Assistant Director for Health Services. I think I understand the question that you're asking, and we've had between the department and the legislature during the interims with the emergency board and during the session, an understanding that permission to apply could be granted retroactively, and on that basis I signed and we submitted the application. There were two other applications, one for an injury prevention grant and one for lead abatement that we did not submit because we got a clear signal from the co-chairs that those grants would not be moving forward. In this case, that message did not receive that message. We submitted the grant and expected that the grant would subsequently be heard, and then were informed that it would not be heard, and so we're in the position, awkward position, of having submitted a grant for which we may not get retroactive permission to apply, in which case we would not bring forward any if the CDC were to grant the state funds, we would not bring that forward. We would not implement the grant. And I regret if there was a misunderstanding about this, but typically that is how it has worked in the interim, and I think we've followed that procedure as best we could.
That piece is fine. Where I'm getting to is that your application was due, and even though it's there, I'm just looking at on the other end of what has been the federal response, knowing that you've had a delay in this and getting your approval to apply, and whether or not in your conversation with the Center for Disease Control, whether Oregon is still alive and eligible. That's my question.
Madam Chair.
What they're interested in. Go ahead.
Madam Chair. It's my understanding that the Centers for Disease Control are aware that there are some issues in our state and have called and asked if there's anything that they can do to assist us with information or whatever in relationship to the various grants that we do have.
Then, yes, you have been in communication with them, and yes, that they're still waiting to see if we can send a grant forward.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, I think you've answered the question.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley.
Yeah, thank you. Just looking at the written testimony, I would just like to expand on what you said about this outbreak of pertussis. Three counties are affected, Lane, Jackson, and Klamath. You didn't name the counties, and I want those counties to be on record. And I don't believe I heard you say as well that there are no matching funds required.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, no, there are no matching funds required.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
One of the, and I am glad that this is back before us, because I also understand there's probably 200 cases as that are out there in the state of Oregon, and that we really do need to address the whooping cough, pertussis, which is the common name is known as whooping cough. I thought that's what I had a few weeks ago when I lost my voice, but Representative Bates told me that it was not. But I still want to impress, and I can't express it anymore. You know, when I look at this letter, and I would ask the agency to please, like you've shared with us, the magnitude of the problem. I think often, and I have the co-chairs have agreed to. You know, we've had this discussion. They've agreed to move this, and that's. You know, I met with them yesterday. I think it was yesterday. It was yesterday I got approval to move it out. Because this is critical. You know, it's critical that we make certain that we can meet not only the federal deadlines. That's also critical. I understand at this time of the year, the federal government is moving as rapidly as they can to end their budget cycle. And so it's not unusual for the federal government to inundate states with requests for proposals and grants as they clean up their end of the year dollars. So I just can't say anymore to make certain that we're communicating throughout all of the system so that we don't have what happened with get grants plugged up in the system someplace and we're not going forward, and then the outcome is that we would not benefit from the dollars from the federal government to do what is really necessary. Because this is very serious. I don't know. And I can remember when I was young and we got all those shots. I think I still have my scar that'll last me for a lifetime. And I think as we go move in society, we forget that sometimes, and I know that Representative Bates is going, as a doctor, will remind us of the need to make sure that we do inoculate and have taken care of some of these issues. Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I'd like to thank you, because I think you're the one that brought this forward and got this taken care of, and I do appreciate your efforts. And you went to the co-chairs and got that changed, and I appreciate it. I think that the chair is correct. There's been a huge lack of communication here, probably on both sides. And some of these grants you bring forward are fairly complex, not clear to a lot of people. And you've got a very short time to apply and get those to us and make a decision. I would also suggest that, and I've asked for a rule change, that in the future when grants come to the Ways and Means, they be assigned to committee for a committee to look at those to help the co-chairs in their decision-making process. The co-chairs are incredibly burdened with the job that they have to do. And I think it's quite obvious that in some cases it's not humanely possible to review everything. I think that the committees, the chairs of those committees, can be very helpful in making that change and looking at these grants a little more carefully. It's my understanding when the emergency board is meeting that these grants do automatically go to the chairs and to the subcommittees, and I think that's probably a better process, and I'm going to ask that we consider that as a change in the future, but it's going to be incumbent on people bringing grants to us that they make those grants very clear to us so we can all understand them.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I agree with and support the statements that have been made by Representative Bates, but I also want to observe, as I've looked at the list of all the federal grant requests that have been approved and denied by the co-chairs, it is interesting to note the number of grants that have directly been related to improving the quality of health, overall quality of health in our Oregon communities. And it's also interesting to note that these are grants that would have affected our very low-income communities and communities of color. For example, and I don't know all the detail on the grant that I'm going to talk about now, but there was a federal grant from the Department of Health and Human Services for Cuban Haitian crime victimization that was denied. A federal grant for chronic disease prevention and health promotion. This was the obesity and chronic disease reduction and enhanced genetics program. The obesity program was denied, but the genetics piece of it moved forward. And then we had a grant for children and families for targeted assistance for self-sufficiency services for resettling refugees through specialized employment services. That was denied. And then another grant for community-focused initiative to reduce the burden of asthma, diabetes, and obesity. That was denied. And then there was the resubmittal of the physical activity and nutrition program to reduce obesity and chronic diseases, which was denied again. So, again, you know, my concern is that these denials have had a disproportionate impact on low-income and people of color communities, and I think that is regrettable, and it is also unacceptable. I think our process has been one that has not been fair in its application. I think we've learned a lot about how this process is going to impact communities in the future. And I support the rule change that Representative Bates is working on, and we need to, on this end, at least from where I sit, I think we need to make some changes that don't harm our state's efforts to improve the overall health, quality of health and well-being of Oregon citizens.
And I've been on both sides of it, so I also understand not only when whether it comes through the governor's office or comes through this body, where there are situations when the request from an agency is denied for a lot of reasons, and some of them is overarching as to whether or not that the particular proposal or what's being requested really meets with the objectives, long-range objectives of the state of Oregon. There's also always that view of whether or not that the federal government is enticing us into doing something, and then within 3 or 4 years later, they withdraw their support, and the states are then left with having to make or continue with some choices they may or may not want to make. And having said that, I also think that it is imperative that we do a much better job of working together to continue communication. I need to go back to that, because it is within that we're able to really have the discussion with each other and where the decisions are made as to where it does fit within our long range and what we're expecting to achieve in Oregon. And I don't think we can make the assumption that you're always going to have a chair or you're going to have members of this committee who know and understand what you're about. And that's why I raise that. You just happen to have on this body individuals who understand the inner workings of human services, who understand the inner working and the issues that you in health services know. You have individuals like Senator Gordley and Representative Bates and myself that are no strangers in Senator Shields to your issue. You may not always have that as legislators sitting before you, and I just implore all of the agencies to make certain that when you're making your request that you're as specific as possible, that you also include in your information who it's impacting, where your partnerships are coming from within your communities. It's kind of better to give more information than to give less. It is also better to discontinue the practice of where you're writing your applications for the benefit of the feds. You have your own buzzwords inside of your organizations, but when you come to this body, we don't understand your buzzwords. And I'm just, you know, saying for all of us that we need to make certain that we are communicating to each other in languages that we all understand. And I think that the blow-ups that we had surrounding some of these grants, it would have been a lot easier for me, because then I wouldn't have had to work twice as hard and try to get these to the committee. We've had this discussion before. It's not the first time we've had to resurrect and go back and bring your grants back before us. And clear and concise language can benefit all of us in this process. And I say that so that in the future, should you not have these individuals who understand what you're about and understand the gravity of what happens when we don't get those approvals, for our communities, that it just helps us tremendously. And thank you, Representative Bates, for what you're doing, and thank you, Senator Gordley, for your words. But it's imperative that we all work together to try to get the best for the state of Oregon that we can get.
Madam Chair, we have heard the message very clearly. I want to thank you and members of the committee for your careful evaluation of these applications, even as obscure as they may be at times. And we're going to work. I've talked with Gene Thorne about how we might convene our management team and talk about communicating differently in the future so that it's easier to have that conversation and to move this agenda.
I think dialogue is just wonderful when we all understand what we're all about. Thank you. And I do thank you for taking it serious. And I have, Gina, and we've all talked about how we can communicate more effectively, particularly in this arena. Thanks. Well, let's see. Mr. Naughton.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, George Naughton with the Department of Administrative Services. We recommend that you approve this request.
Okay.
Madam Chair and members, LFO also recommends approval.
And since we still do not have the House members out of their caucus, I'm going to close the work session on the federal ban application request and open the work session on House Bill 2288. I think I'll cancel this. Yeah. I'm going to cancel for now and bring it back on Monday, House Bill 2288, and open a work session on House Bill 2349 related to patient safety. Mr. Knott. Oh, excuse me. Mr. Britton.
I'll take that as a compliment.
I mean, it's to be.
Madam Chair and members, I have been asked to hand out an amendment to House Bill 2349. This was a bill that we had a public hearing on back on July 7th. At that time, we heard testimony from Ms. Gwen Dayton and some others about this bill. We also received a letter from Aaron Kelly Seal, who is the governor's health policy advisor, expressing a number of reservations about this bill. Since that time, it's my understanding that the parties have come together to work out compromise language, and that is what is in House Bill 2349, the A4 amendment, which I will hand out at this point in time. Yes.
Are you going to walk us through the amendment, Mr.
Yes.
Britton?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Well, I will in a moment.
Okay.
Before I do that, Senator Gordley, Aaron Kelly Seal had an opportunity this morning to review the A4 amendment, and she has provided us with another letter. Generally in support of the A4 amendment. However, she notes two changes that the governor's office would suggest. And in addition, Senator Gordley and members, I have another comment to make on another section of the A4 amendment. So with your permission, I'll hand the
please
letter out from Aaron Kelly Seal. As I understood it, the main concern that the governor's office had expressed at the public hearing was a concern with the structure, namely that this would be a patient safety corporation, and they were concerned with the ambiguity of state law related to public corporations. The amendment would change the general structure of this agency or organization to a patient safety commission, and it would be an independent or a semi-independent state agency. These kinds of organizations exist. We know how case law relates to those organizations, and this amendment would conform the structure of this patient safety commission to a semi-independent state agency, as I understand it. The other concerns that arose during that public hearing were ones that you expressed, Senator Gordley, namely that it would exempt, at that time, the public safe or patient safety corporation from certain statutes, including those related to affirmative action, smoking and or restriction on smoking and so on. And as I understand it, those exemptions have been removed from this amendment, the A4 amendment. Senator Gordley, I can point out the areas. There are two areas that Aaron Kelly Seal has some concerns about, if you'd like me to do that at this point.
Please move forward.
If you look at her letter dated July 18th, she points out in section 7, sub 6, and it should be on page 8, line 19, the governor's office would recommend on that removing the language after notice and public hearing. So section or subsection 6 would read, the governor may remove any member of the board at any time at the pleasure of the governor, and then it would eliminate after notice and public hearing and go on to say, but not more than 8 directors shall be removed within a period of 4 years unless it is for corrupt conduct in office. So that was the first suggestion that the governor's office had on line 19, page 8. The second change, as I read in Ms. Kelly Seal's letter, is on page 11, line 26. It would make this subsection read, disclosure under state, and then would be inserted the language law, pursuant to Section 2, sub 3 of this Act, and, if permissible, federal public records laws. So those are the two changes that she recommended for the A4 amendment.
Representative Bate.
Yes, Madam Chair. This bill, as we see it now, has been fully vetted by all parties, and I think it's ready to roll, with the exception that Section 13, page 13, will probably need to be removed because it references general fund money. This is going to be funded entirely by other funds. I don't know if you mentioned that already, Mr. Britton.
I haven't represented Bates.
And that section will probably need to be pulled, too, on a conceptual amendment, along with two changes that have been suggested by the governor. I don't know if people are completely aware of what this bill is attempting to do. We have a significant problem in the practice of medicine with errors being made, and to say that's not true would be less than honest. And one of the things that prevents us from being effective in eliminating those errors is that we don't, because of the fear of lawsuits, share the information with fellow physicians and hospitals. When I was chief of medicine for 4 or 5 years at Rogue Valley and Providence Medical Centers, hospitals of over 300 beds in combination, we would often have a sentinel case about once or twice a year that we really couldn't discuss with our staff. And that would have been very helpful and educational to those people, and we couldn't do it. This commission will allow, in a broad sense, those type of discussions to occur on a statewide basis. It will guide physicians and hospitals in preventing further injury to patients through errors, which can commonly occur, usually in a breakdown of the system. It may not seem important to those people outside of medicine that this occurs, but it is amazing how this lockdown of information affects us all and affects your and my safety when we go to the hospital or go to a doctor's office. So we really want to see this go forward as something that is excellent from the point of view of allowing less chance for errors as far as patients are concerned and provide significant safety for those patients.
Dr. Bates, and I want to thank you because I know personally, being the one who has you and I have worked very diligently and brought this forward, and the individuals who got together after we had our hearing, and I pulled the committee together to work through the problems and the concerns that the governor's office had raised. And what we see today is a product of everybody sitting down to resolve the concerns and the issues that was raised before this committee. I believe it was last week, or week before last. Time is going by so rapidly. And with and I understand that everyone is agreeable to the amendments or the suggestion has been raised by the governor's office, and that there are no one that are opposed to the language that the governor's office has requested for changes. And also, Mr. Britton hasn't got there yet, but one of the things that we had discussed in the overall group in order to look at how this body could be structured, it was my suggestion that we have the dollar. I mean, I go for, and I guess that may make the co-chairs a little nervous, but certainly it's my intent, and I think the intent of others, that we make certain that we do have the legislation and the ability for this organization to move forward. Sometimes I think we forget about things that are happening out there in the world and what those implications are about. And I have to applaud the industry in coming forward and saying that we want to have a vehicle to make certain that we reduce the errors that occur in our own institution, our own setting. And that's very important, because if you look at some of the report, the report that came out that talked about the number of deaths and things that are occurring as a result of errors, I think it's important, and I commend you for wanting to actually scrutinize yourself. And I thank you, Representative Bates, and those of you who were involved in working on this issue. So, Mr. Britton, I'll give it back to you, unless the members of this panel. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question with respect to fees that this commission will originate, and approval of those fees, and getting that up and going. Could you speak to that, John, in terms of the oversight that's expected from this body with respect to those fees?
Madam Chair and Senator Morse, that's a good question. This is a semi-independent, or would be a semi-independent state agency, and the board of directors could impose fees on its membership. What those fees would be, I don't know. I think they don't know until they organize this commission, see what it costs to run it, see what it costs to assemble the data that's asked for or would be required in this particular bill. So I don't know how much their cost would be.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you. I appreciate very much the work of the work group, and also would say that I hope the point has also been made that as this effort moves forward, that the commission needs to be inclusive and represent the true diversity that exists in our Oregon community. I think that point has also been made. Thank you.
You want to finish walking us through?
Yes, Madam Chair and members. The one change that Representative Bates mentioned a moment ago, Section 13 allows for an appropriation of general fund. The amount is unspecified in this particular amendment. As you know, the chair mentioned that she had suggested putting a dollar in for that amount. I would caution the committee that the co-chairs have had a strong aversion to even putting a dollar in some of these bills. And the rationale is that once we put a dollar in this bill, it allows or it would allow the commission to come before the emergency board and request a general fund allocation from the emergency fund. And they have taken a dim view of that. So my recommendation would be to consider removing Section 13 from this amendment.
We're still absent, and I've sent someone to see to determine at what point the Republican caucus will be adjourning, and without the Republican members, we can't move any of this out. So it's my intent that we'll go into recess until I determine what's going on with them. Senator Shields.
I just was talking to Representative Bates and wanted to say out loud for the record and maybe get a response. None of these changes represent anything substantive enough that anybody in either body, House or Senate, would object if it wasn't reviewed by a substantive committee.
And
I just wanted some reaction to that on the record.
Yes.
Actually, a good question. I don't believe there is anything here that would give anyone any heartburn in this. We have changed the vehicle only, and the intent and everything that the commission will be doing now is not changed. So the substantive part of it is not changed, but the vehicle was changed at the governor's request, and for good reasons. And all parties that brought the bill forward have agreed to that. I mean, the work done by Bruce Bishop and Barney Spate and Scott Gallant is greatly appreciated, along with Aaron Kelly Seals, to make this work right. And they've worked very hard and diligently on this. And as the chair has spoken to it, this is an opportunity for us to do some real serious policing of ourselves by sharing information about patient errors so that we can learn from each other's errors and do a better job for patients. I don't think there's anything here that would be a problem for you.
Thank you.
Yes, I just wanted to say I kind of wanted that on the record so that people could say that we, in fact, did take cognizance of this, when it came before us. I like the bill, but, we're a political body, and if somebody decided to raise an objection, that could be one, and now we've discussed it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for raising that. In the meeting, we attempted to have both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Of the both Senate and the House and those individuals who actually sponsored the bill, that they were there and all of the providers and all the stakeholders who were players and involved in the development and spent the months on the bill and trying to do accomplish two things. One, to satisfy the objections that were raised by the governor, and to make certain that too was taken care of, and at the same time to be able to achieve the objective. And that objective was for us to have a vehicle to begin to look at errors and to begin sharing that information. And I think this was accomplished, and I...
Thank you.
Okay. And we look like we're getting ready to have, we need one more House member, and we're ready to...
Madam Chair, there's a meeting for House Democrats and Senate Democrats at 12.
Oh, don't tell me that.
So if we could expedite this.
We get
really
one member, if we get one House Republican member, we can start rolling.
Is that 12 o'clock, isn't it?
Yes.
Maybe we should let them know that we're not going to be right there.
Would you contact... I guess, not unless we want to meet tomorrow.
We'll wait and take care of this, Madam Chair, quite clearly.
We just need one member.
Or a co-chair.
Or the co-chair, or Miller.
Yeah. He's not here.
That's all I need.
We can run some stuff out. You want to just take some votes on all the stuff we have left about them?
So if... Yeah, we'll stand in recess for a couple of minutes while they go. We'll just write down the list. State Commissioner Shane Fanning.
Not the what?
We're in work session on Senate Bill 5507, the State Commission on Children and Families. Representative Bates moves LFO's adjustment and budget as per amendment to, is that, that's one of
5507?
5507.
Yes. To full ways and means?
Right.
Do pass recommendation.
And we, and you want to do all, you want to do them separate? Are there any objections? Second. Representative Bates moves approval of budget note.
So move, Madam Chair. Let me grab my stuff out of here.
Any objections?
What are we doing?
We're moving the budget note.
Moving the budget note.
We're still on 5507. Okay.
And Madam Chair, I'd move the performance measures to Senate Bill 5507.
Are there any objections? Carriers, Bates, and myself. Work session open on House Bill 5030, Department of Human Services, Health Services.
Madam Chair, I would move that House Bill 5030.
That is a preliminary.
Preliminary work session only?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
We don't need to pass it out.
It's the LFO adjustments.
Reshoot. I'd move those to be accepted.
Representative Bates move House Bill, the preliminary House Bill 5030 adjustments as presented by LFO. Are there any objections?
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordy.
I won't object. I will give you a courtesy vote, but I do want to serve notice that if I don't see improvements in the mental health portions of the budget by the time this does get to full committee, I will be a no vote.
So noted. Representative Westland.
I'm satisfied, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any objections? And we will note the courtesy by Senator Gordon. Approved. Same carriers. Work session on House Bill 2189.
Yeah. Madam Chair, just to clarify, we're not moving House Bill 5030. We don't need carriers for that just yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I knew that.
Yeah.
Representative Bates.
I'm quite ready for that. Nope. Madam Chair, House Bill 2189, which is the fiat bill, I would move to pull Ways and Means with the two pass recommendation.
Well,
help me here.
Here's the thing.
Madam Chair and Representative Bates, we need to move the A4 amendment.
I'm sorry. First. And, Madam Chair, I would let me correct that. I would move the A4 amendments with the conceptual.
No, just A4.
No changes.
Okay.
This is the fiat.
A4 fiat, as amended.
Representative Bates moves the A4 amendment. Are there any objections to House Bill 2189? Representative Bates moves.
Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 2189 with A4 amendments to full Ways and Means for with recommendation for approval.
Representative Bates moves House Bill 2189 with the A4 amendments to the full committee with the due pass recommendation. Are there any objections? Work session for the Department of Human Services federal grant application request for adolescent and adult pertussis immunization.
Madam Chair, I would move the federal grant application for adolescent and adult pertussis immunization to be forwarded to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bates moves the request for a federal grant application to full Ways and Means with the due pass, with the understanding that the agency, if they receive the grant, will come back to the emergency board with the limitation request and any FTE request. Are there any objections?
Last but not least.
Work session, House Bill 2349 relating to patient safety.
Madam Chair, I would recommend that the conceptually amended A4 amendments to House Bill of 2349 be accepted.
Representative Bates moves that the -4 amendments be accepted to House Bill 2349. Is there any objection?
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2349, as amended by A4, and the conceptual amendments to A4 be forwarded to the Full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bates moves House Bill 2349 with the A4 amendments and the conceptual amendments be reported out to the Full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Are there any objections?
No session tomorrow.
No session tomorrow. Just a sec. Oh, first I have to thank all of you because this has been a I think, marathon fun run. Senator Gordon.
Yes. Madam Chair, I feel compelled to say this, that, and this, again, is an observation about our process, which is supposed to be thoughtful and deliberative. And I don't know how it can be completely thoughtful and deliberative when we haven't had a full compliment, you know, half of our committee members here. And this is with all due respect to our members who couldn't be here because they had another responsibility that was also important. But again, the point I'm stressing is that this is supposed to be a thoughtful and deliberative process. And the issues that we've worked through in all of these bills this morning have been, they're so huge, they're so important, I just think we need to slow down at times and really focus on what we're doing and ensure that we're doing it with everybody who needs to be at the table.
Thank you for your comments. I want to thank you for your hard work today, and I want to thank you for the members who made it here. It's my hope that, as always, that you, when you get your information, that you read it ahead of time. So that, and if there's any questions that one might have, that they get it to us. We are adjourned.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
President Westland. A quick question. I'm sure I'm comfortable with this. She'll explain it to me, but 5030 is not going to full committee.
That's correct.
And just wanted to make I'll get the explanation.
Yes, you can get But 5030 is for the audience. We have been making certain that we are getting all of our preliminary work, particularly the rebalance and the reshoot that the agency had to do completed so that when we do receive the body agrees to the dollar numbers, it is much easier then to go ahead and to begin to plug them in. So it's getting our preliminary work out of the way, but no, this does not go to full committee. That's on House Bill 5030. With that, we are adjourned until next week, and have a good weekend.
But we know that that's the...